The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Closing Day, featuring episode 191 with KR, who has a portfolio of over 120 units. And so we're going to get some of his thoughts about the Section 8 programs for real estate investors and some of his thoughts about building a real estate portfolio utilizing the special programs out there. So without any further ado, episode 191 with KR, the Black Real Estate Dialogue Closing Day feature. Let's go.
Online, it's just like this big race. Like, everyone is trying to get as much as they can, as fast as they can, where the other side is like a lot of those people might be over leveraged. A lot of those people may not be making any money at all, even if they have all these units that they claim to have. So, yes. You know, I think it's easy to replicate the model of slowly growing over time.
And then the model that I use is the opposite. Everybody tell you go run and go get an LLC to buy your property. I was completely against that when I did my research. And what I learned is that Prior to 2011, 2012, you could only get 4 mortgages in your personal name. And the government changed the rules after the Great Recession and said you can get 10 mortgages in your personal name. The reason why is when you get mortgages in your personal name, the government knows that there's so many benefits and they didn't want investors to take advantage of it. But that was like the best thing since sliced bread for me, because I was like, whoa. So you're telling me if I get it in my personal name, my interest rate is lower than if it's in an LLC. I get 30 years fixed. My closing cost is lower than if it's in an LLC. My insurance premium is lower if it's in my personal name versus an LLC. I said, what? You get down payment flexibility, whether you could put, if you're a veteran, put 0% down. You have the NACA program, 0%. If you're a doctor, a lawyer, a medical professional, and have 0% programs. And then even if you don't live in a property, you could put 15% down. I was like, what? They have this construction product as well. I said, there's so many benefits. I'm putting myself in my personal name. And a lot of people say, but KR, what about the risk? When you get an LLC, you still have to get insurance. When you buy in your personal name, you get insurance, but you can get an umbrella policy. Where I say is, when I look out the window, it's about to rain. I don't only put my raincoat on, I also get my umbrella. So just get an umbrella policy. So that's what I tell a lot of people when they start. Focus on the cash flows, because your cash flows will be much higher. The LLC, you got to put 20% down. You got to pay for an extra tax filing. So get your feet wet, learn the business, and then I eventually start buying properties through my LLC in 2019.
Got it. Man, I like that you mentioned that too, because this LLC stuff is like running rampant, right? And I think what's being prescribed is that everyone should get an LLC right out the gate, and that's how you should buy your homes. That's just what's popular, but to your point, it's like, it's most likely not the best thing for most people who just starting out.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot easier for you to come up with 3.5% or 0% due to NACA program, depending on where you live in the country, and get a 1-4 unit, where at least you're getting a little extra money that it can cover. Or even if you don't need that program, you could put 5% down, 3%, get a conventional loan, don't even have to pay PMI. So who got 20% for all this stuff? It's fancy. Yeah. It's just not realistic.
So something that we've talked about a whole bunch is Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how the program is running, all those things. So what's your take on Section 8? And is it something that you think you'll ever use in your rental portfolio?
I think the Section 8 program in many ways is, I know for sure it's not for me, but in many ways, some investors do like it. And some investors like it because the government will pay like 70 to 100% of the rental income, depending on the tenant. But from my experience, Section 8 has too much regulation for me. So for instance, if you do the Section 8 program, they're going to put, for zip codes, they have a certain amount that you can charge for rent based on what Section 8 think the rent should be, the government. The other thing is the government's going to send someone into your property to inspect it prior to someone moving in, and also on an annual basis. So therefore, you may have an apartment ready to be rented, but depending on that local jurisdiction, it may take 30 days, 60 days. When you have a market-ready tenant, you can get your money immediately. The other thing is that Section 8 will have restrictions on how often, how much you can raise the rent. So what about if I just put all this money to fix this thing up? I want to raise my rent by like 50% because I'm a businessman. I'm not a church. I'm not the government. I'm running a business. And Section 8 will say you can only raise the rent by 2%. Or you got to put in an application, like in Philadelphia right now, the Section 8 applications, if you want a rent increase, they're still in, I think, June or July of 2022. So your application is going to be late. Even though you just bought this property and you want to request the rent to go up, say it's renting at $1,100, but it really should be $1,500. You submit an application to Section 8. They're a year behind. Then they'll get to you. And then eventually they'll say whether we're going to give you the $1,500 or $1,400. So I'm like, oh, hell no. If you're a private landlord, you'll be able to tell those tenants 30-day notice if they're on a month-to-month lease or whenever their lease expires, rent will be $1,500 or you guys can just move out. I don't have to wait for the government. So those are some of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of Section 8, because it's too much regulation, too much red tape.
Got it. It's funny. I think I may have told you this. On a property I recently purchased, I'm like, you know what? And he was telling me not to do it. but on a property I recently purchased, I was like, you know what? Let me just at least see what the process is. I may not do it, but let me just see how it's run. So I called. I'm like, you know, I'm the landlord, whatever. There's the information. They're like, all right, we can send you the owner's packet. Give us the address. I gave the address. They never sent the packet. So that told me everything I needed to know about how the program, at least in that city, is being run. Mm-hmm. And it's probably similar all across the country.
Yeah, it could be messy. But some people don't mind the messiness or the delay. And some people, their properties are in crime-ridden neighborhoods. And we'd have a lot of dilapidated houses where a lot of people don't want to live at all. So therefore, for those investors, they think that that's all they can get. But if you know that you're delivering an outstanding product, what we do at KJ Consulting is we give our tenants a champagne experience and they pay liquor prices. So if you know you have a good product, you're confident that you're going to be able to find good tenants that can meet your high criteria.
Definitely. And to your point about the location where some Section 8 properties are, a lot of landlords don't even take it, especially in many cases as you get to like nicer areas. A lot of times those folks look for market rate tenants. So I think for the person with the voucher, it's almost limiting them.
It is.
As to what kind of community they can raise their family in.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that people don't like about the Section 8 program is that over like 90% of landlords across the country are not big fans of Section 8. So therefore, the people that do get the voucher, they're kind of limited. And then some cities actually let landlords deny people with Section 8.
Yeah, I think it kind of needs an overhaul on all sides, in my opinion, because
probably does.
You know, there's probably a good amount of landlords who would be open to using the program, but it's just administratively a complete mess. And also, it's for the tenant, it's helping you, but is it really helping you? Mm. Like in the long run, like if you can't really choose the community you live in, the kind of environment your kids are in, you can only go to the landlords who take the voucher, and that's already like a small portion of people. So
it's difficult. That's why I'm not in politics.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there definitely needs to be some work done. What about other type of similar programs like vouchers and stuff?
Well, I think programs are there now. Nonprofits are less, I would be open to nonprofits and stuff like that, because some nonprofits, whether it's an organization like Against Abused Women or veterans or stuff, those programs are not like Section 8.
Yeah.
So they're more localized, more focused, and less red tape.
Yeah, that makes sense. You spoke earlier about increasing rent, and you actually had a pretty direct conversation with me telling me you need to increase that rent. And so a lot of times when you acquire properties, do you acquire them in distress where they're at low rents and you know, need to be fixed, things like that?
So that's our strategy, is that we are focused on value add opportunities. So we always buy properties that actually have been undermanaged, The rents have not been increased, and the properties are not always in the best condition. So what we go in is we renovate the exterior and the interior, and we also evaluate each of the tenants and decide if they can move forward. And then we do a cash out refi for our property. So that's pretty standard. And the rent increase, we like to tell people the way we look at it is like a business. Every year, your insurance goes up, your property taxes go up, all your bills. When you go see the doctor, that bill has gone up. So therefore, it is only fair that everybody get used to increases. So just like you go get an annual physical, we like our tenants to know you're going to get an annual rent increase. And you only have to pay, you only have to pretty much do three things in life. In our book. One, you got to pay the IRS. Two, you have to pay your rent, and then you can die. Now, if you can do those three, you're going to be okay.
Yeah,
definitely. If you can't pay, you can't stay.
Yeah. What's that conversation like with the tenant who, I'm sure you have plenty of examples, but who's, it's like a couple hundred dollar increase, let's say. You know, you've upgraded the unit, you've upgraded everything, and this is the new price. Like, what is that interaction like?
We do not negotiate with tenants. It's just like when you go to Apple and you go buy that iPhone, you can't call Steve Jobs or someone and say, or Tim Cook and say, can I get a reduction? No, you see the price, that's what you get. So some landlords negotiate with tenants. We do not negotiate with tenants. This is the price, and we tell you the reasons. Your rent has increased because all of our expenses have gone up, and your late fee has gone up as well. So, and we're going to get the collected difference in the security deposit as well because of the new rent. And we don't have a discussion. Yeah. It's black and white.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.